Morning, Doug.
Morning.
How you doing?
Good.
Good.
How are you?
Good. I'm hoping I get a little bit of a break this weekend. It's felt like a pretty long week.
Yeah, they just drag into the next week, man. They
I know.
all seem to be pretty long week, yes.
Well, I think we're gonna get out, be able to get out and do some camping. So that's always helpful to just reset a little bit.
So,
You're the boss.
yeah, we're waiting on Mo. So, is
No,
Mo?
Mo's on vacation. I'm guessing
Oh, okay.
Chuck is here to talk to us about the ambulance permit, I'm assuming. And I see Cheryl's here too, Doug.
Yeah, so is it, I don't know. So we're scheduled for the emergency operations management, the consideration approval. Oh, so. Okay, so yeah, let's Chuck, we'll probably turn it over to you. Consideration, approval, and authorization for the chair to sign the ambulance permit number 54-2017 for the vehicle operated by the Event Medical Solutions Unlimited. So, Chuck, you want to unmute yourself and lead off here?
Can you hear me now?
There you go. You're good.
Sorry about that. I was trying to use my headset and it doesn't seem to be working. Real quick, this is another ambulance application from Evan Latramerti with EMS Unlimited. He would like to add a fourth ambulance to be licensed in Routt County. The general idea is that he continues to bring ambulances on his fleet so that he can be more flexible in his operations, and hopefully to our benefit of having, another ambulance licensed in Routt County that he can utilize in case one of his other ambulances is elsewhere. So he manages his fleet, with kind of whatever pops up first. And so the idea being, if he's on a transfer in Rifle or from Moffitt or somewhere else with his other ambulances, this is just another ambulance that he could respond and help us out with. So otherwise, his application is complete. I did send it to Mo, and I have a copy as EMS Council representative. And so we just need that approval from you folks and get the permit in his ambulance. It's been inspected mechanically as well as by our local inspector as far as all the proper equipment and everything that need to be on.
That sounds good. Beth, you got any
Yeah,
questions?
I'm ready. Nope, I'm good. Thanks, Chuck.
Yeah.
I move to approve and authorize the chair to sign the ambulance permit number 54-20-17 for the vehicle operated by Event Medical Solutions Unlimited. It's a 2001 Ford unit EMSU04, VIN number 1FDXF47F31EB59027.
Second, any other discussions? All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye, very good. Thank you, Chuck.
Thank you guys, appreciate it. And I think Cheryl will have the hard copy for a signature, and then I'll take that and get that laminated. So, thank you.
I think Tim said he'd be in the office on Monday, if I remember correctly. Cheryl just.
Okay. Well, I'll let Evan know that it's approved, and I hope to get him the hard copy permit by beginning of next week.
Sounds good, Chuck. Thank you. Have a great day. So I think our next item is
Looks like the state lost our paperwork and we have to resubmit But I'm assuming Cheryl is our.
So Cheryl, do you have that then?
I do have
That
that.
authorization for the chair to sign the memorandum of understanding for participation in the Colorado Emergency Fire Fund, EFF.
Yes, I have that. I'll have Tim sign three copies on Monday, and we'll resubmit it to the state. They did lose the paperwork, and so they requested that we resubmit, and Eric said it needed to come before the BCC again before it could be signed. So that's why I'm here.
Sounds straightforward enough to me.
So I guess I'm a hair confused. So it got lost, and then so Eric wanted to have us reauthorize.
When you all approved it in March, I submitted the three required copies to the state. They have not, we were told they had them, and then they came back and said, oh, no, we can't find them, so you need to resubmit them. So we're just resubmitting to get the state signature on the copy. And I would have just went to Tim and got him to sign them, but Eric said we needed to go back before you for the approval again.
Okay.
I guess we just do what he says, huh?
Clear as mud.
Yep. All right. Let me find this here. Mr. Chairman, I move to approve and authorize the chair's signature on the Memorandum of Understanding for participation in the Colorado Emergency Fire Fund between the Board of County Commissioners for the County of Route, the Route County Sheriff, and the State of Colorado, acting by and through the Department of Public Safety for the benefit of the Division of Fire Prevention and Control.
Second. Any other discussion? So, so all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. So, Cheryl, are you going to leave that for Tim to sign as well, or are you going to give it to Kendra for us to electronically sign it, or how's that happening then?
No, yes. I need Tim's original signature on it, so I will check with him on Monday, check his availability, and run the copies up to him to sign.
Okay. If it gets lost a second time, there's got to be a bad omen to it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Thank you,
Cheryl. So we have accounting coming up at in 10 minutes, looks like.
That's what it looks like.
Yeah. So I see you sent, Beth, you sent to all of us that regarding the Greenwood Village thing. Man, I watched that on the news last night. Was wow. Holy smokes.
I know.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh. There's a whole list of things I'd rather not deal with right now.
Yeah.
Let's keep that on the list.
What do you want him to do?
Hey, Sean, I don't know. It looked like Doug maybe had to step away for just a minute. I think he was planning on starting at 9:50. Oh, he's back. Oh, Sean, we can't hear you. We don't hear you, Sean. I don't know if your microphone's working or not.
I guess we ran him off. Sean, are you still there? There he is. I don't know if Kendra or Deanna need to unmute him.
Can you hear me now?
There you go. There you go.
Okay. You're good.
Oh, you
ready?
Yep, go ahead. So we're here to talk about the CDPHE certification letter regarding the COVID-19 funding.
Right. So this is additional funding that we are getting. CDPHE has awarded us an additional $55,000. Part of the stipulation with this grant is that the county needs to sign a certification letter stating that we're going to spend all the funds on COVID-related items. That's, I think, a little cheek and tongue, considering we've already spent more than that in the past 4 months on this anyways. Eric has read through the agreement, and the certification letter has basically come to the conclusion, is comfortable with the letter, and recommends that we give the county manager signing authority to enter in or sign the certification letter in order to receive the funds by next week. We have already received half the funding already based off of the agreement with CDPHE that was wired into us last week. And this piece of it is due no later than the 15th of next week. Right now, it's pretty straightforward. Most of this can be used for any of the COVID fundings that we need and that we spent money on. So right now, I think it's more or less, I wouldn't say a rubber stamp, but basically a rubber stamp for your guys' approval to give Mark the authority to sign the certification letter.
Can you just clarify which funding source this is from? That $55,000 number wasn't really one I had seen before. Is this the specific like ELC LPHA funding?
Yeah, it's an additional funding through Public Health LPHA. It's COVID related. It is assigned to a grant number, but it's not CARES Act and it's not Relief Funds Act, so it will fall under grant regulations when it comes to spending, and yes, it is through public health.
And is this that like $400,000 that we had to write a 30-month?
No, it's not that funding. It's
totally different from that.
Totally different, yes.
So this is like, this sounds like surprise money. I don't feel like I knew about this money.
It is surprise money. I spent the last month figuring out all the funding that Carrie's getting, and she's got an additional 3 grants, including that ELC grant that you just talked about, the 438. This is in addition to it. So this is LPHA funding. Actually, it is CARES Act. So I misspoke. Grant funding doesn't relate to it. We're just certifying that we're going to spend everything on COVID-related items that was not budgeted for as of March 31st. This is, as in your words, surprise money that we're going to be getting to help cover some of our costs.
Love it. Yeah. I don't think we should refuse it, Doug. What do you think?
No, I don't think so. No. Look a gift horse in the mouth.
Yeah. Don't ask any more questions either, though.
So I would move that we approve the CDPHE letter, certification letter, and authorize the county manager's signature on that in regards to the approval by the county commissioners.
Second.
Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Very good, Sean. Thank you.
No, thank you. So the only thing I need then is, Mark, once you get a chance to sign it, just send me over a copy and I can get that into CDPHE by next week.
John, do you want to do that as a DocuSign, or do you want me to just go ahead? I can slide by and just sign it right in your office if you like.
Whichever way is easiest for you. I'm in office for the morning. If not, we can have Deanna send it to me electronically. Either way, it doesn't matter to me.
Sounds good. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
So the next thing we're waiting on, Kevin Booth. So we'll.
Yeah, is Kevin doing it? It looks like it's a supplemental budget. Is it Kevin or accounting or both?
I believe it's just Kevin.
Okay. Oh, we have to also do, it's not just a supplemental, it's also a purchase. Okay, got it. Sounds good. Oh, and I guess he has several items there.
Things are getting exciting in the COVID world. So Douglas County is bowing out of Tri-County. So
I know, I saw that. I was gonna text my friend Emma, who's a commissioner in Adams, and just say, do you think you guys are gonna miss him? I'm sure that's been a crazy setup. It's kind of like if we tried to have a public health district with Moffitt. We're just different, you know?
Yeah.
And you, as you've referred to, you kind of delegate the decision-making authority to somebody else. And when you don't agree with them, like, what do?
So if Douglas needs some advice, you know, we can give him some advice on taking back over public health and all the stuff that's entailed in that. So yes, indeed.
Aye, aye, aye.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I would have ever been very comfortable with the concept of giving over the authority to, you know, to a separate board that's not an elected board.
Yeah, and I don't know how it's like what the governance structure is. I mean, does each county appoint someone, or are they totally independent? I don't even know how that works.
Well, it's evidently an independent board, and so, you know, they are, but they probably have some appointment responsibilities and reporting responsibilities, just like the appointments that we make for different things, you know.
Right, That would make sense.
Yeah.
I saw that too. I don't know. I don't know how the governor goes on much longer without a statewide mask mandate. I know he's resistant, but... watching his press conference yesterday, it feels like the writing's on the wall with that for me.
Well, he could do that. That's just fine. He could take the heat for it. That's good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you just think about all the options, right? Like, if we're getting to a place as a state where case counts are worrying, wouldn't you assume that you would do that before you would start shutting things down? I mean, that seems obvious to me that you would take that as an intermediary step. It seems irresponsible to just jump over that and just start shutting things down again.
Yep. Yeah, I don't know, man. It's getting some exciting times from front on the eastern seaboard, man. The place, Florida and the rest. Wow.
Well, in Arizona, have you seen the numbers from Arizona?
My brother lives over there in Fountain Hills.
Oh yeah, right.
He's vulnerable age like everybody else. I bet he hasn't left the house to do nothing.
Well, that's smart.
I wouldn't be. So.
It looks pretty bad over there. On our commissioner went on our. I had that CCAT call that we have on Wednesdays, and it's really interesting to hear from the southwest corner, you know, San Juan County and all them, because they are so, they're right on the New Mexico border. I mean, they're practically in Mexico, and that's what they continue to be the most worried about. They have so much back and forth, and they, you know, they can't control it, and they're surrounded by these states that are having crazy outbreaks.
And then the Indian, the
reservation
issues. I mean, yeah. So, wow.
They've been worried since the beginning, though. And they've been saying, hey, we've got kind of a different thing going on here down in our corner, and we need some help. But it's, I think it's really worrisome to them now, honestly.
Commissioners, can I just ask a question while we're waiting?
Sure, that sounds good, Rob.
So we talked about with Dr. Harrington at the Board of Health putting a travel policy together, and I've been working with him on writing something. Is that something that you we need to like do a formal agenda item, or is that just like a part of a COVID-19 discussion?
Depends on how much teeth is in it. So I guess, I mean, is it an advisory document or?
Yeah, it's just a guidance.
I think we should get to review it before it goes out, but I don't know that like a vote is needed. What do you think, Doug?
Yeah, I think we need to put our 2 cents in on it. So, and again, it probably holds a little more weight if we actually do adopt it too. So might be better. So that's yes, definitely yes, maybe.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to make sure I do the formal procedure. All right. Thank you.
It sounds like maybe you think it's not mandatory, but it might be valuable for us to do that. Just
got it. Got it. I'll work with Deanna on that. Thank you.
Yep.
Sounds good. Kevin, I see you're here.
I am. If I figure out how to unmute here.
We have a couple things with you this morning.
Yeah, I've probably got way more than we scheduled time for, but we'll get as far as we can get.
You have half an hour. You don't think you can get through all this in half an hour?
Yeah, talking about spending millions of dollars, though.
So. All right. We're going to spend 1 minute per dollar.
So why don't you go ahead and kick off, Kevin?
Okay.
So we're gonna start off with the spray equipment?
Yeah, that's the one I would like to start with. Hopefully that's a relatively straightforward one. It's not $1 million. It's basically we're looking at $16,000. Between our restaurant general manager and our lead janitor, and then lots and lots of research with EPA, FDA, CDC, I think we are honor bound to put in mitigation steps that assume that things are going to be the way in December, things are going to be the way they are today, and figure out how we can best keep a safe, clean, disinfected terminal. So this, I put together a supplemental and included that in the package. However, I've since learned from accounting that they don't want to do a supplemental on this for COVID-19 items, and that they're going to roll all those up at the end of the calendar year. But I didn't want to spend $16,000 that wasn't in my budget because COVID-19 wasn't in my budget without running it by you and making sure that I have your concurrence on investing this kind of money in disinfecting equipment. So with your permission, I'll give you a quick recap of what it is we're buying. Hospitals, other airports, larger airports are investing in this kind of equipment and have in the past. It's not a new technology. It mostly was out in the horticultural world, frankly, and then has been applied to this. It's an electrostatic spraying system where you spray this stuff and then it seeks out any surface. And so it prevents, you know, it gets the underside, it gets all sides of seating, office equipment, that sort of thing. And so we looked hard at about four or five different systems. Clorox makes probably the most popular one, but the chances of us getting that equipment in the scope of our order before December, mid-December, when we really need it, is slim or none. And Clorox has made it kind of proprietary, so you're tied to their products, and their products aren't easy to get either because they're in such high demand. So we evaluated three others and came up with the one that I've got down here, which is an e-mist system. And we can get the chemicals that it uses. The chemicals are not wipe off, so it's spray and leave. And we're buying two large sprayers. They do about 50,000 square feet per hour. We have a 400,000 square foot terminal. So you can figure out this is going to be a significant burden on our janitorial staff, but this was kind of the fastest, most effective machine on the market. And one of the only ones that does have this spray it on, leave it on, food safe. So we can use it anywhere. We can use it in the restaurant. We can use it anywhere in the terminal and not worry about, you know, a toddler licking a hard surface in the waiting area and getting sick. So the purchase itself is for two large machines, which do the 50,000 square feet per hour, mostly because if one breaks, we're not gonna be able to cover the terminal. And then three handhelds for things like office spaces and for work across the runway. And then some spare batteries and things for those, because those are battery operated. So that's it. It's about $4,000 for the large machines, two of those, and it's about $1,500 each for the handhelds, three of those. And then it is by far the cheapest as far as what we need to continue to use it, to buying the products and stuff, and they're easily available. We do have a significantly long lead time, and that's why I tried to jump on your calendar as quick as I could once we'd finished our research. So we have an 8 to 10 week lead time on these items. So we'd really like to get your concurrence to order them as soon as possible. So I'll stop there, see if you have questions.
Questions, Beth?
No, I do have one, I guess. I sorry if I missed this. You'll pay for this from your CARES Act money?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's what I thought.
So that was kind of similar question that I had, that, I mean, your conversations with Stranad and the rest, that, I mean, there are two different pots of money. So their airport CARES money is different. So this will be coming out of the airport CARES money.
Yes.
Yeah,
exactly. But it's still an expenditure that's not in my budget. And there's going to be a lot of these, I think, between now and December. It appears that Dan was on vacation, so I'm getting this from Sean, and I'll confirm it when Dan gets back. But, you know, this roll up all of them in December, I still feel honor bound, you know, to kind of go through the supplemental process. A significant amount of money, well over my authorization limit. So I guess this will be the way we do it. We'll talk about it, but you won't actually see a supplemental until toward the end of the calendar year, according to Sean.
I appreciate the transparency, Kevin. So I appreciate us talking about it. And, you know, and again, I appreciate you guys doing the homework out here, coming up with something so that it enables us to open up as early as we can as well. So, and doing
the homework. Yeah, I should give kudos to Jennifer Bell, really did a lot of legwork on this. And so obviously she's running the restaurant and the snack bar, and Just as an aside, we just applied to change our liquor license to include the whole secure area. And so that's going to drive, you know, a beer and a burger is going to be more likely consumed at the gates now than the tiny little snack bar, which we may not open at all. I mean, we may not even have seating in there this season. So we're talking about kind of a, you know, a very large eating area in the secure area, in addition to, you know, all the other public areas that need this kind of disinfection. So the rule will, we'll disinfect every night after business is closed, you know, so there's nobody around when we do this, and then it'll sit overnight, and then we're working on a really aggressive cleaning schedule throughout the day beyond that. So we'll just use these machines once a day after hours.
Well, as we get ready to open up the courthouse, or we have especially opening up the meeting rooms as well, we might have been having similar type needs for that as well. So,
yeah, and I did send all the information to Ray, just in case he wanted to look at these, because it is a pretty effective way to disinfect public areas, you know, as often as you need to, and it's really only about a 10-minute dwell time before it's safe to have people in there. It doesn't really have to wait overnight. It's not that toxic, but the key is not to have to wipe it off, you know. So this is spray and leave.
Any other questions, Beth? Anything? So I guess I'm ready for are we just approving the authorization of the purchase of it, and we'll just make a note that we'll have a supplemental, a roundup or a cumulative budget at the end of the year?
Yeah, I can do that. I move to approve and authorize I think I'm on the wrong one. Let me open the right one. I'm trying to work on the next one, Kevin. Let me do this one.
Okay.
I move to approve and authorize the YVRA director to purchase the electrostatic spray equipment and products outlined in our agenda packet, noting that this expenditure will be included in the CARES Act supplemental budget at the end of the year.
Second. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, so go ahead, Kevin. We'll go on to our next item.
I'm going to go on to, I think the next one we ought to cover is the AIP 47 terminal expansion project and FAA funding. This is a fairly significant amount of money. I did only give you the one spreadsheet. So I will kind of cover in general what it is I'm asking for and what's kind of happening here. So, are you able to see the spreadsheet?
Yeah, I didn't see a spreadsheet. I only saw the cover sheet.
So it is in the it's at the, toward the end of the packet. So.
Oh, is it under one of the other ones? Maybe.
Yeah. So it's behind the MOU with the I just found it. So yeah.
All right. I'll see if I can find it here. Yep, got it. Thanks.
Okay. So if you go down to the bottom of the spreadsheet where it says total and it's a gray horizontal line there, you can see that the total cost of our project is $4,258,320. Of that, eligible costs are $3.7 million, the next column over. However, we haven't received FAA grants for $3.7 million. We received FAA grants totaling about $3.5 million. And so that was the grant for AIP 47, and then the supplemental grant that we got last December for $1.5 million. So we're still shy. If you look over on that same line, the total line, to the far right, which is labeled AIPXX Future, we'd be asking the FAA to give us another third grant to make up the difference because the project is more expensive than it was estimated to be. The FAA knows that. That's part of the reason we got the $1.5 million in supplemental. But they are very hesitant to continue issuing grants against a project that was supposed to be done in 2019. So what the FAA has told me and our engineers is, why don't you guys spend a little bit of that CARES Act money that we're giving you on this? Because if you ask us to give you another grant to cover the costs, the eligible costs, that's going to impact your CIP, which is locked for the next 2 years. And so it would mean that we would probably lose the opportunity to buy the rotary broom that we have scheduled for 2021 purchase and have to defer that. And frankly, that's high risk. We've talked about this before. We have three brooms. Two of them are great, and one of them takes 90% of our maintenance time to keep it running. So, and we need three. When it's really snowing out here, we need those three to get that runway open. So, basically what they're asking us to do here is spend some of that money to the tune of about $260,000. I like that, because the other thing it does is it gives us our full entitlement next year, which is kind of mandated if you're going to get discretionary money from the FAA, and they're trying to give us discretionary money to do the second part of our projects in 2021, is our de-ice pad. So, you know, we're growing, maybe not this year, but at least in airlines, we're growing significantly. And if things return to normal next year, we're going to have a lot more airplanes trying to de-ice. And that is our choke point. So I really don't want to lose the broom. That's really important for keeping the runway open. And I really don't want to do anything that will jeopardize discretionary money for our de-ice pad. So the FAA wants to do that, but they're kind of honor bound to, if we start taking money in the way of grants from either entitlements for this amount, it's going to put one or the other or both of those in jeopardy. So I think it's a good use of our CARES Act money. It will probably, I don't know if it'll come out of the O&M pot or the development pot, but either way, that money's kind of, we're going to manipulate it between the two pots, and I think it's a valid use of it in lieu of what we're facing next year in the way of traffic and the amount of traffic that Southwest is going to bring to us, and the importance of having a reliable third room. So my ask is to authorize me to start using CARES Act money to make up this difference and pay off this whole project this year. And we will also probably pay off with CARES Act money the about $336,000 that we owe on the project. So it's our local match. It's the parts of the project that we knew were ineligible. There's HVAC work and then some replacement of windows that were deemed ineligible. And then, as it turns out, our signage on the south side of the new facade of the terminal has been deemed ineligible because it's not on a public area, it's upstairs. So a little bit of a surprise on a $27,000 item that's now deemed ineligible. But my kind of tactic here is, Let's spend, instead of spending our reserves, let's spend this CARES Act money. And so some of that would have been paid out of our reserves and is budgeted. So it'll be a reduction to some of the budgeted expenditures that we have. So I will try and pause there. That was a lot of information in a short burst. So see if you have any questions or concerns about spending the CARES Act money this way.
I don't have anything.
Sorry, I had a phone call come in here. I'm trying to not blast it through the. So, do we have to get approval on that, Kevin? I mean, yeah, I'm totally supportive of your idea here, and we want to have, you know, acceptable projects that that CARES money could be used for, and an investment into the operation of the airport, and it sounds like a reasonable thing of what we're doing. Especially, I like the concept of using that CARES money to pay our portion of what was going to be the money that we were going to put in anyhow. So that makes a whole bunch of sense.
Yep, that's right in the initial CARES Act information packet that we all got. Was any eligible costs, anything that we could normally use our revenue to pay is eligible for the O&M pot, the $15.5 million of CARES Act money. So, and it's actually the FAA who's approving those requests for reimbursement that's telling me you need to put a little skin in the game and pick this up instead of asking us for a new grant out of a pot of money. You've got this CARES Act money. Do that, and it's a wise investment, because otherwise we're going to have to reconsider, you know, some of the grants that we have lined up for you already for 2021 and 2022. So I take that as, you know, fair warning to me to listen to them, and I think it's a good use. And again, it's going to leave more money in our reserves than we had actually budgeted. So, and that money we can count on. You know, I don't know that CARES Act money is really going to be around 4 years from now. Who knows? So I'm not trying to spend thrift and get rid of it, but this, you know, based on inputs from the FAA and the ability to protect important grant money next year and protect some of our reserves, I think it's a good use of it.
So has the project gone up in cost, or is this is what we were looking at all along anyhow?
Project has gone up some, not a lot. I mean, the project just came in higher than the engineer's estimate. We can talk to the engineer about their estimate, but it was significantly low. You know, it's like 33% low. So, but again, we only had the one bid, and we certainly needed it. We wouldn't have Southwest coming in here if we weren't doing this project. So,
well, that's the second time that we've, so the engineer bid was low too. So
yeah, I mean,
we put it on hold and rebid or renegotiated after it was high.
Yeah, and after working with FCI closely for the last 3.5 months, I think their bid was realistic, frankly. So, it's a new part of Mead and Hunt that I haven't dealt with, their architectural side, and I'd say that they have some work to do to refine some of their bidding. But we got what we got, and I think we're going to get a good product from FCI. And I think this bodes well for 2021 de-ice pad and getting a new broom that we desperately need.
So I guess I'm pulling back up the motor. So what do we actually need to, what do Beth and I need to actually, Commissioner Melton and I need to actually approve here then?
So I'm asking for approval and authorization to utilize CARES Act money for AIP 47 and 48.
And that'll be based on the spreadsheet that you have here that,
yeah,
that you provided us?
Yeah. In total, it's about $600,000, some of which, you know, was going to come out of our reserves, and some of which we would try and get through future grants that may not come or may jeopardize these other ones. So,
Kevin, is that, when I'm looking at this spreadsheet, is that basically a combination of the section under local and AIP future? Are those the two things that we're funding from CARES?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Are you ready, Doug?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I move to approve and authorize the YVRA director to utilize CARES Act funding for project costs deemed eligible by the FAA. Costs that exceeded the AIP 47 and 48 grant funding, and to fund the local match associated with all AIP grant funded projects as outlined in the spreadsheet provided to us.
I'll second. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, very good. Kevin, let's go on to the solar project. Tell us what's happening.
Yeah.
And which one it is.
Yeah, I know. So this is the one for us. And DOLA, Greg Winkler, has been working directly with Winnie Della Quadre. And so this is Winnie kind of talking to all the entities that are listed in your packet there. And what was originally going to be designed for a 12-year payback, based on DOLA inputs, they've determined that DOLA wants all the entities to buy down with upfront money, match money, buy down the payback on this to a 10-year program. And by doing that, they're going to increase their overall amount of money that they're investing in this. So it was originally listed at, I think, $1 million, and their grant funding now is up to almost 1.5. So for us, they've got our project cost, what I think is low, and we have a meeting on Monday, but we're basically at the point where Winnie is got our feet held to the fire saying, you have to sign this MOU. We're not completely tied into the amounts on the spreadsheet, but we can't move forward with you as a partner unless you sign this MOU with the Colorado Energy Office. I've reviewed it. It's pretty boilerplate stuff. It doesn't have a lot of details like a normal MOU. It's basically just saying we, the owners of this portion of the project agree to use this energy performance contracting program that the Colorado Energy Office has used in lots of other places in the state. And you end up, you know, hiring somebody like McKinstry, who pays for the project less our upfront cost, and then they get paid back through the energy savings over the course of the first 10 years. Well, I don't know, Commissioner Munger, if the project that was previously done at the Justice Center was done under an agreement like this or not, but it seems to be standard operating procedure for the Colorado Energy Office. And I would say I'm probably one of the last ones to get this in front of you and get it signed. So Winnie's desperate to have the MOU signed so we can move forward.
So there's another spreadsheet in here that it has the city Steamboat, Mount Warner. And so, and go back to your question. So on the Justice Center, yeah, we got to just a flat, they sent us the money, and then we got a contract with YVEA to buy the power and give us a premium rate on it. And then we ended up putting the things in. So it was totally different. So I guess it may, you know, and we have some time here. So if you could explain a little bit, we've got the, in our packet here, we have the memorandum of understanding. And I guess the other question, has legal, Eric and Linnea, Linnea?
Oh, that's my fault. This one kind of dropped out of my cross check, and then I got the red flag warning from Winnie that she's got to have this thing or we're going to get dropped out of the pool. So I'll certainly send it to Eric and talk to him today, and see what he says. I don't think we have much room to change it. I know Craig has already signed theirs. City of Craig has, and doesn't mean that it's vetted completely, but, you know, and I'll talk to Winnie this afternoon and see if we can get a little bit of an extension so we can get Eric and Linnea to take a look at it. But there's not much to it, really. It's at the end of the day, it says you agree to use, I think they call themselves an ESCO, an energy service company, which McKinstry is one of them. And McKinstry's got the lead on this thing, so I think they've got the inside track, and they're a known quantity for us, and they're the ones that were working this project for us before it became a group effort. So
can you explain the spreadsheet to us then?
Sure.
Yeah, so we're actually looking, I mean, so it's on page 52 of 55 of our packet. And so you have the Yampa Valley Regional Airport, and the site is the airport. And project costs of $429,000.
Right. And so what I will find out on Monday is, you know, the percentage match required. You know, I obviously we're in the higher ones, so there's some that are pretty low or they only have to match at 26%. And I think I'm going to find out that that's the, you know, if you look at it, it's the Oak Creeks. Town of Hayden's got one that's fairly low. But I don't really understand the match required piece, why it's not the same for everybody. But
yeah, we're kind of getting the stick up their nose on that. That's not very good.
Yeah. I mean, I get, you know, everybody knows that we've got this CARES Act money, and obviously this is a developmental project. So I will tell you that I had on the original, so I'll divert here for a second, but the original spreadsheet that I gave you with developmental projects for the other 3 million included a backup automated weather and observation system. And the FAA has dug their heels in and they will not let me install one. So, so we are not going to spend, that's $750,000 that we had allocated for that. And, out of that money. And what we're going to do instead is I've got some volunteers on my staff that are going to become trained weather observers. And we're going to do it the old fashioned way. If the AWASP breaks, we're going to go outside and swing a wet bulb over our heads and figure out what the dew point is and measure the clouds and do stuff like that. So I'm going to have a bunch of weathermen working for me here before the season starts. And that'll be a lot cheaper than $750,000. So there's money in there, and you know, it will probably mandate that the environmental, some environmental studies are done on this thing. So it's not going to be real quick, but that'll fall to McKinstry or whoever gets the final, whoever's selected as the ESCO for this project. So anyway, this is another one. Our match being $321,190 would come out of CARES Act as well. So.
So how did they come up with all of the numbers then, the match requirements and the rest?
I don't know. I just got this from Winnie yesterday or the day before. And like I said, our next meeting is on Monday. And so we're going to go over this. So I'm afraid I don't have a good answer for you, Commissioner.
Yeah, that's fine. It's typical for this.
Yeah. I should, but I don't. I apologize. I don't have a good answer.
Well, the bottom line is, so what happens if, so is everybody else signed on to this thing and everybody else has?
Oh, I think Craig was the only one. When she put out the red flag alert earlier, Craig was the only one that had signed there. So we're not the only ones that are slow to sign the MOU, but she begged everybody to get it in the next day or two. And so I will reach out to her. Well, it's Friday. I don't think the city's working Fridays anymore, are they? So I'll email her, but at worst case, I'll get a hold of her Monday morning and see if we can have a couple days to work this out.
I mean, I'm just looking through some of the numbers here. The town of Hayden and the wastewater treatment plant is, you know, a match of $323,000. Well, really? Okay. And the redevelopment, the building, the match on that Hayden is $289,000 as well. So,
yeah. I mean, in my recent discussions with Matthew, and you've probably had the same ones, I would say that's not happening. They're balking right now at patching some asphalt in front of us where they dug a hole in front of our terminal. So they're pinching every penny, I would say, and understandably so. But
yeah.
So, yeah, this is I think Monday, one of the things that will happen is, you know, if you haven't signed the MOU and you have any issue with this match, you need to let us know because it's going to change the whole lineup. So some of these projects may not happen. And so I don't have, you know, I have great faith that the numbers in this spreadsheet that you're looking at will change. How they will change, I'm not certain. You know, so.
So the MOU, and again, I'll feel a lot more comfortable when Eric and Linnea review the MOU, but, and again, I guess the MOU locks you into the funding that we don't have a supplemental budget approved for as well. So, yeah. And you're in good shape. I mean, this is good investment money for the CARES Act thing. I think this is totally appropriate for.
I mean, 10 years from now, it'll be a significant reduction in our utility costs for us. So, and I think, you know, I've already talked to McKinstry, you know, what's here does not include resiliency. If some of these other entities balk at their match and drop out, some of that money may be diverted to us, like buying backup generators. You know, it could increase our match, but if right now our project does not include resiliency. It's just solar that will reduce our power bill, but won't be charging batteries. We figured out that's having a battery bank big enough to run this place is unrealistic even today. Till Elon Musk gets smarter on batteries, and we figure out how to do that better. McKinstry highly recommended generator, probably two or three of them in total, one for the airfield lighting, one for the terminal, a big one for the terminal, and then one for our facilities across the runway. So they've already done that legwork, and that could potentially be folded in here if some of these folks start dropping out. You know, I mean, I just don't know that the town of Yampa is going to come up with $67,000 or $68,000 to reduce their power bills as their match. So
I think Kevin. Yeah. Quick question. I've been involved with a couple ESCO projects in the past, and I know the driver for those typically is, hey, we're going to come in, we're going to identify savings for you, energy savings, and then you're going to realize those savings in time over a payback period. And typically that low-hanging fruit is lighting. Is this just simply concentrated on solar conversion? And there's no lighting, or there's no mechanical, not looking at pumps and so forth. Is that just simply the driver for this?
It is. And Mark, that's because we beat them to the punch about 3 or 4 years ago. We started trying to figure out how to reduce our electric bills because YVEA was increasing their rates significantly. And
right.
It's a huge cost for us. So we converted all our lighting to LED. We finished that conversion last year. So
good. Great.
That's the first thing they asked us. Let's take a look at your lights. And they started looking around. It looks like you have all LEDs. And we go, yeah, we've done that already. So we basically broke even. Their rate increase was offset by our LED transition. So our utility bills stayed pretty much flat. Well, our overall, because of the savings with the LEDs. So, yes, so this is, you know, what I had originally – and I'd started this project with McKinstry before this joint effort started with Moffat County and Town of Steamboat Springs. And so we had already gotten a full report from McKinstry on solar power for the facility and resiliency and backup power, and gone down that road. And we were just about the point where we were going to have to start spending money if we were going to move forward with the project when this effort came in. And DOLA jumped in and offered some money. So it was pretty easy transition for us, and McKinstry knows our business, and we've given them all the information they needed to do it. So now we just got to figure out who's really a player, who's gonna contribute, and what does that do to our contribution and our buy down amount, and whether we can throw in resiliency on top of this.
Yeah, it's interesting. So we throw a $1.5 million of DOLA money in, and then come back up with $3.2 million of project funds and the rest. So it's kind of like throwing a bone into a dogfight. So it's kind of like, oh, well, yeah, we'll see what happens there.
Yeah, yeah.
Beth, do you have any questions or comments?
No, I don't. I'm glad to see that we're continuing to figure out how to move this solar project forward. I know when you first brought it to us, it was kind of like, this is not ever going to be worth the money. And it's nice to be able to figure out how it can pencil out, because I think the environmental impacts are positive, and it's nice to be able to figure out the economic side of that in a way that balances. So,
yeah. And I think when McKinstry did their initial proposal to us, and it was going to be about $800,000 of cost out of our reserves to put this in place. You know, this was before we got into this ESCO business. And so if our match right now today is $321,000, and we're getting similar product as we would have through what we had worked through with McKinstry in the past, it seems like a pretty good investment. So I think I owe Eric an opportunity to review that MOU. I'll send that to him right now. And I'll talk to Winnie and give you guys an update, probably in my monthly update, which is coming up next week, if not before. And then we'll just, I'll look for time on your schedule, you know, sometime next week, if Eric is good with the MOU, and we can wait till then to get it to Winnie.
I think Eric is trapped over in the waiting room. Can we let him in and just make sure he doesn't want to say anything? That would be Deanna. I have a heads up because he's texting me that I think he does want to say something.
I see a phone number in the waiting room. Is that Eric?
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes. I don't know. I kind of like it when we just keep Eric over where he can't talk to us.
Well, I was reading this MOU while you guys were chatting, and there are some fairly onerous responsibilities of the facility owner, just agreeing to EPC program and engage the energy office for assistance. And that one's, I guess, not that onerous, but there are some. But what's interesting, and I assume, Kevin, you read through this and can comply with these so-called requirements, but when you get to the bottom in section 5, it says this MOU is not intended to create a legally binding or enforceable contract, and the only remedy for non-compliance is termination of the MOU. So I'm fine, I guess, with moving this forward, Kevin. It's not enforceable.
Okay. Perfect. I'll fill it out and forward it to Commissioner Corrigan, or do you guys want to?
Jim can do it.
Yeah, he's going to be in on Monday, I think.
Okay,
Kevin.
All right.
Or either that, or you can just print out the copy and scan it and send it to him, and he can, or Kendra can. Well, Kendra's gone, so Deanna can electronically sign it too, so whatever.
Commissioner Corrigan and I are masters of the electronic signature now, so.
Great.
Send it up quickly. All right, I'll put together a little bit of a summary for him and send it to the BCC, so you'll all see it, and tell Winnie maybe Monday.
All right, Mr. Chairman, I move to approve and authorize the YVRA director to draft and coordinate execution of an MOU between Route County and the Colorado Energy Office in support of the DOLA-sponsored solar project at YVRA.
Second. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Yep, thanks, Kevin.
Okay.
I hope this is a silver bullet here. I like the concept of it. It seems like a lot of strings attached to it.
I do. I do as well. Yeah, we'll see what comes of it. But, okay, that's all I had today. Unless you have any questions, like I said, you'll see my monthly update next week.
So your construction project going all right? Haven't had any snafus on it?
It's going okay. There's been a few things that have slowed them down a little bit. They were late to start working, and I think they underestimated the requirements to get the state to give them a fire permit. So that's slowed down. We haven't had a fenced in but open hole in front of the terminal for a lot longer than we should have. But other than that, no, it's going pretty well. Like I said before, I'm happy with FCI. I think we've got a really good superintendent, and then the project engineer and project manager have both been here every week for our construction meetings, as has Jeremy. He's come up every week for the last month and a half. So yeah, it's going pretty well. I gave an update. So Commissioner Melton heard my update yesterday, but business is picking up here at the airport as well, both at the FBO and yesterday, 200 seats, 155 passengers. So over 75% load factors this time of year is better than normal. Yeah, we're getting busy. And things are going pretty well out here.
Well, good. I like to hear that, especially in COVID world right now.
Yeah.
Any bright points?
I will share with you, and I did yesterday to the chamber a little bit. We're working really hard to be ready for crowds in December, and you know that is going to be a tough nut to crack. So we're figuring that out. We're on conference calls with other airports. You know, I don't know exactly how we're going to do that if we're still, you know, trying to mandate social distancing in December, you know, even in the hold rooms, when you've got 150 seat airplane and 120 seats in the hold room, how are you going to maintain 6 foot spacing there? So I don't have all those answers yet, but I will assure you that we are working that every day really hard to determine how we're going to do it. And for the most part,
I do not expect it to go away.
I do not either.
Yeah.
Frankly, it's getting worse, right? So
likely to get worse into the fall and winter, right? I mean, not like we're going to be ready to ease up.
Yeah. So I'm rooting for a super mask design. So some smart engineer to come up with something that goes, you know what? You've got a 99% chance of being safe, even if you're within 2 feet of Kevin Booth, as long as you're both wearing masks or a vaccine. But given that may, neither one of those may happen before December, we're going to have some contingency plans, which may involve, who knows, may involve standing around in a heated tent outside the terminal for some of these folks.
Yeah.
We can bring back the Bedouin tents, and you know, and that we had before we built the terminal. So yeah, that you know, we'll do like the restaurants, you know. So we'll just put them out there on the tarmac in a confined area, so they have to stay within the ropes. So,
Kevin, I do have a question. I saw that I know they're not really layoffs, but United's news the other day.
6,000 employees.
Yeah, it was interesting because I heard them talking about it on the radio, and it's like they have to make notification of anybody that they might have to lay off. It's not really like they're actually laying them off, but is what I understood. But I guess I'm just wondering if you're aware of what impacts that might have on folks locally who maybe are working for the airline.
It could certainly, since the ground handler United Ground Express is a wholly owned subsidiary of United, I don't think those 36,000 include our ground handling employees. But certainly if United, the parent company, is laying off whatever percentage 36,000 is of their workforce, they may ask their subsidiaries to do the same thing. You know, their model is so personnel heavy here. Over 100 people to do ground handling for two airlines. It's all designed around low pay and flight benefits. And, you know, if they have to cut, say, 25%, then they're down to 75. To me, that's plenty of people to do what they do today. Just means that everybody's going to work a few more hours. And if flight benefits, I guess the 75 that feel that flight benefits are worth working a few more hours for low pay, they'll do it. So I know in talking to him that, you know, a lot of the UGE and former SkyWest employees, they greatly value those flight benefits. So as long as they keep their flight benefits, I think they would easily go, you know, I'll work 20 hours this week instead of 16. So.
Anything else for Kevin? Okay. Thank you, Kevin.
Thanks. Have a great weekend.
So we have, so we're a little late in, so I didn't do very good. So COVID-19 work session, in case anybody else has something. So talked about things yesterday. So.
Hey, Doug, I have something that if I could kick things off, and I believe, not sure if Kathy's on the line, but she can chime in and add to this discussion. We had a bit of a glitch, and I want to bring that forward and make sure that both you and Beth are aware of that, and certainly I can copy to Tim. But we went ahead mistakenly and advertised for health educators in an advertisement that was published this morning. And we were going to hold on that, of course, because I know that dialogue and that discussion was still going on, but it got out the door. And so I just want to make you aware of that. Both you and Beth aware of that, but also solicit some feedback from you. We can pull it and make sure that ad will not run again for the time being, or, and that is some expense involved with that, or go ahead and continue, but of course not hire anybody or make any commitments whatsoever in terms of bringing those people on board. I know that we still wanted to have more of a detailed discussion about that. I'm still owed a list from Gary Suter at the city in terms of the names and the contact folks that we might have that would assist us with some of those health education efforts. So I know that's still in the queue right now and that's not done. But bottom line is it did go out the door mistakenly. We can pull it and there's a cost to that, or we can continue to let it run and then see just exactly who comes forward and then continue that conversation. So throw that out and solicit your feedback.
So I'm all right with you, you know, and again, that's, you know, that's fine. So I think we need to, you don't need to pull it. I think we just needed to have the conversation. I mean, this was all blind and new to me, and we didn't have any clue to health educators, and, you know, so, and you know, I realize this is all you know, COVID related and COVID expenditures, and probably going to be coming, and Beth can tell me that it's going to be coming through the local, the LPHA money and the rest, and so, which is all fine, but I apologize for my kind of losing my cool yesterday, that it isn't very good to be hiring people when we don't have a home for them. So, and I'm just figuring out how we can put A and B together to come up with the next letter B and C. So I'm just trying to figure out how the hell we do that. So
we're all getting kicked out of our offices, Doug. We're done. No more commissioner offices.
I have my vacuum chair here. So
yeah, there you go. Yeah, I'm fine with what Doug said too. And thanks, Gary. I forgot what jurisdiction we were in here. Thanks, Mark, for bringing that to our attention. And yeah, I mean, if we decide we're not proceeding down that path, it sounds like we could still do that. I would say, and I had this question about the epidemiologist too, anything that we're looking at hiring on as a permanent position, I think we absolutely should have the commissioners review and authorize that before any hiring takes place. And I understand we tried to expedite this, and I appreciate that we did that because I think it's important, but I don't think there should be any commitment made to a permanent position without commissioners formally authorizing that, whether it's the health educators or the epidemiologists or whatever else it is. Because I think I saw that the epidemiologist was posted, not labeled as a temporary position. I don't know about the health educator, but I just want to make sure that I understand Kathy's forgiveness position. And I think given where we are, I appreciate the ability to move forward as quickly as we can. But definitely if we're adding positions, I think that that are intended to be longer term. I think we need to authorize those before that those people are actually hired.
Absolutely, Beth, and that's, I think I reiterated in a conversation in the last day or so that, you know, per the provisions that we've got in place for the hiring freeze, that is an official function of the commissioners to say, I bring forward a recommendation through the HR office, and then the commissioners provide authorization. So we'll make sure that we've got everything lined out. We'll next week, we'll make sure we'll bring those forward. And we'll make sure that we formalize everything and make sure that we sew that up. Yeah, absolutely. We've been trying to work at a quick step because we realize how important it is to fill some of these really important slots for public health. So we're, you know, I know we're using that term a lot, flying the air, building the airplane as we fly on the heels of Kevin's presentation. But and nonetheless, we had a glitch there. So we want to bring that back and make sure that we get all those proper authorizations. I have one other question for the commissioners this morning. It's a fairly—
Can I make a comment on the health educator? Are you moving on to the topic? Okay. I just thought, Doug, I don't know if you had a chance to review what Kathy sent to us yesterday. She sent an example job description from Weld County on that health educator. I thought it was really helpful and really informative about kind of what this person would do beyond just, you know, supporting the kind of at work that Scott's office is doing right now. I think I thought it was illustrative in terms of kind of the broader role of a health educator and kind of the expertise they have in developing educational materials and some of those kinds of things. And I thought actually, as far as COVID response, it would probably allow us to be more, you know, more effective in our educational efforts, honestly, to move them beyond just being kind of messaging efforts, but really have someone who has some background and expertise in health education, whether they have an MPH or an RN or whatever else, to help us in the longer term to make sure we don't have to rely on enforcement, but it really can be education. So I thought it was illustrative. And then I actually, spent a little time, just because I've been working on these CDPHE contracts, looking at some of the deliverables in those contracts that a health educator might be able to do, because again, there's funding there. So that would be that kind of longer term. And I just helped Carrie with the time of going through and identifying those and provided that to her to kind of do what she wanted with it as far as presenting that to us. So I thought it was helpful to really read that example job description to understand exactly what we're looking at. And I'm sure that Carrie and Mark and Kathy will bring that forward. But just wanted to point that out to you, Doug, maybe to take a look at that job description. I thought it was useful.
It's in my unread pile. Yes, thank you.
I know. Mine keeps getting taller. I totally understand.
Get back to it. So yeah, no. You know, and I'm supportive of the investment that we might make, and especially if the investment is being, you know, funded through, you know, the CARES money and the rest for us to be recovered here and to be moving forward. But, you know, you brought up a perfect point here. I want to make sure, is this a temporary investment or is this a long-term investment? Is this the new normal? Is this the new future? And like, wow. And, you know, you know me, and I'm the tightwad, and I'm against kingdom builders and kingdom building. And so, you know, it seems like, wow, this is kind of getting out of hand here a little bit. And of course, I do want to expedite the recovery here too. So,
And I think we should have discussion about, is this temporary? Is it permanent? Is it, you know, what does that look like? And I do think that some analysis of those CDPHE contracts is helpful because that is the longer term funding. And so understanding, and there, you know, there's a significant amount of money there for doing exactly this kind of health education work, whether it's around cancer screening or tobacco cessation or breastfeeding. I mean, there's all those contracts are kind of, and health education is right in the middle of all those. And so I'm sure Carrie will be able to describe it in more detail, but as I kind of compared those, that job description to the deliverables in those CDPHE contracts, I saw where it might be worth consideration of a longer term kind of commitment.
So right now, for sure, though, we still have a very strong logistics problem into where everybody's going. So maybe we can rent back some of Northwest Colorado Health's office space, you know.
But they were out of space, remember? They were wanting to join with us on the pilot building.
Yeah.
I know I was actually walking my dog yesterday and I was trying to rack my brain about who has recently vacated their office space that maybe would be better than this kind of shared co-working space that we could take over temporarily. I have no idea. It's definitely a logistics issue. Maybe we should set them up in tents with heaters outside.
So commissioners, we did, speaking of that very same subject, we had a good conversation yesterday on our department head meeting, and Kelly was on board, and we've already done the investigation in terms of the use of the cabin, and she's okay with that. We're doing just a couple more cross checks with persons that were staff members that were using that to make sure that they're then redeployed in another location. But I think that that's going to work out. And Robert was on board, so he's ready to go ahead with the green light for all the IT services that would be provided. So we think we've got a solution for now for some of the positions that we talked about yesterday. So, and Kelly was very cooperative and very willing to help, which is terrific. So we're doing some of all the on the ground work in terms of making sure that we've got the right physical resources.
That sounds great.
That's good. I'm glad that the cabin is going to be a good option because it seemed kind of like the best fit. They can have just their own space that they can sort of take over and utilize however works best for them.
You bet.
So how many people do we think we can accommodate in the cabin? Do you know, Mark?
Beth,
ever been in the cabin?
No, I haven't. So I'm going to fly a little blind on this, but we were talking about maybe being able to comfortably, again, with the proper distancing, accommodate four staff members in the cabin. And
that's kind of what I would picture. I think there's like three offices and a kitchen and a kind of a living room is what I'm remembering.
Right, you bet. And that's, again, dependent upon, we also have to identify another location for our lactation room. So we need to do that because that's currently in the cabin. So we've got to work with Ray and facilities to make sure that we identify a spot for that.
What about all those basement rooms? No, I'm just joking. That's not where you should make someone pump. They can use my office. Okay. Tell Libby she can use my office.
Beth, so, if you are okay with that, I may offer that up.
And I actually am totally okay with that. I'm really not using it at all right now. Honestly, that's what I did after I had a baby. I had to use my boss's office. It was fine.
Okay. I'm just going to jump in and say, I will go ahead and let this advertisement run, but I will formally present to you the contact tracers and the epidemiologist and the health educator next week, and we can discuss how or if you want to fill these positions.
That sounds great, Kathy.
Yep, sounds great. Thank you, Kathy.
Thanks for your work on that. Thanks for committing to moving those quickly. I know poor Carrie is just, and the rest of her staff are drowning, and it'll be very welcome relief.
So when we're still on COVID 19 discussion. So when are we having amicable divorce with Moffitt County?
End of August, isn't it? I don't know if somebody, Eric probably has the best update for us on that, I would guess.
We had a 60 day window, Commissioner. So I think you're exactly right, Beth. I think, I'm not sure the exact date in August, but it's the latter part of August.
I don't really have an update other than to say I know that Moffitt County offered Carrie a pretty attractive deal if she were to go over there.
So we might be looking instead of them, huh? Oh, how the world turns.
So you use the word amicable, Doug. I'm not sure that's appropriate now.
Okay.
I mean, are we really surprised that they would do that? I would have done it if I were them. Well, but I think they're also posting the position, I hope, and not just hoping that they're going to steal Carrie.
I've been forwarding Lynette all of our job descriptions and pay scales for public health positions. So they're moving forward with creating their own department. At least their HR department is focused on that.
Well, I guess we probably need to know a little sooner than later, because for ourselves too. So.
Well, Carrie would have, I mean, she would have to resign, right?
Yeah. So we were having this discussion about space and the rest. Is Jim Johnson still in our facility, and whatever happened to that discussion?
Doug, Jim is still officially an employee with Route County. I believe it's until July 22nd. And so he's been still retained in those capacities until then. And that was the notice that we had to provide per the provisions of the per our own HR provision. So that's the status of Jim. And then, of course, as you probably recall, we are allowing CDPHE to see if there's another entity, another public jurisdiction, that's going to pick up that responsibility of being basically the facilitator for that position going forward.
Thank you. Yep.
Doug, I do have one, again, one really quick item, and it is COVID related. And if Kathy is still on board, we have gotten the, we have been presented with the opportunity to have Route County employees and staff members get tested through the normal testing resources that we have available on that ongoing basis. The only question for the commissioners, just to make sure that you're comfortable with this, is if we allow any of our staff members, employees to go get tested, whether they would be paid for that time that they're going through that testing regime. And that is my only quick question for you.
How long does it take?
We had a good template with Todd in the extension office. He and another staff member went over, and they actually, I think their turnaround was 15, 20 minutes.
I mean, I feel fine. I don't really want it to be like outside of their work hours and they're getting paid, but if they are on the clock while they go get tested, I would be supportive of that. I don't know what you think, Doug.
So I'm semi-supportive as well. So a semi as in, you know, ought to be some limit if they're over there in 2 hours or something, you know. So hopefully, you know, maybe we limited it. I don't know how you do that either, but I'd hate to say the blanket yes, and, you know, but if it's up to an hour or something included in, you know, sitting over there and doing whatever, I mean, it is an investment in our workforce, and I support that. So I'm comfortable with that, but there ought to be some sideboards on it, maybe what I would say, something like that.
Doug, Beth, we appreciate that. Why don't we just say that we send the notice out that they're given it an hour of release time to go ahead and get that done. And if they need to check with the schedule at the testing area to say what's a good time earlier, later, to make sure it's within that hour window, we'll ask them to do that. And thank you for them that you provide that provision. I think that's terrific.
I had asked a few weeks ago, I guess this question is probably for Kathy, about whether there's a way, it's just $10,000, but that UMR money that's for employee wellness, if we're leveraging that in any way in relation to this. I mean, if it's already committed and being spent on something else, that's great too, but I just know it's a use it or lose it. So I wanted to make sure that we're utilizing that money.
They indicated that we could not apply it to the testing. I think the testing is going through our insurance. The testing is free for the employees, but we still have to pay our portion of it.
But not if it's going to public health. Public health isn't billing insurance.
Yeah,
but if we're switching gears and we're not, public health isn't doing it, and it's going to get, you know, any testing is done, you know, at the physician's office, then I think it does go through insurance.
Yeah, at the doctor's office. But we just talked about offering to our employees to get tested by public health, right? I understand what you're saying, Kathy, and it may be that we can't use it for that at all, but it is different. I mean, we're paying for that testing, not through insurance.
I will go back and get more clarity on it. Based on the questions that we've asked, we've gotten a no on that. So I will go back and make sure I understood it correctly.
Do you have any other ideas about how we might leverage that funding to support things that need to happen right now?
You know what? I would love to talk about it. Can I present it to you guys next week when I talk about the other areas so that I'm better equipped to have the conversation?
Yeah, that would be great. I'd love to hear what ideas you have. I do know I'm just working on this Protect Our Neighbors framework. This is totally maybe a different thing, but one of the things that's required in there is to increase flu vaccinations. And so I don't know if things like flu clinics for our staff would be on that list or not, although that may be, again, through public health money, but just a totally random idea.
Well, the flu shots that we do each year with the benefits fair, those are free to employees if they have health insurance through us.
Oh, got it. Okay, cool.
But I'll put something together for next week.
That'd be great. Thanks, okay. Kathy.
Yep.
I didn't have anything else.
Beth? I did have something else, and now I'm not. I totally don't remember what it was. So.
Robin has something maybe. So
all right, I'll see if I can remember it.
I apologize for my not writing it down correctly. Did I get okay for the advertising, or did you want to look at the memo first? I couldn't remember.
I haven't had time to review it yet, so I think.
Okay, all right. Well, just if you guys can let me know on Monday, maybe that would be awesome. Thank you.
That's fine with me. Yeah, so I'll look at it.
Yeah, when were you going to run that, Robin?
Whenever you guys approve. My thought was, just because we have so many visitors in town, that I wanted to do some more visible advertising in July and August when we have.
Have you looked at it, Doug?
No, I have not. No.
Okay. What's the bottom line on it, Robin? I mean, I may be willing to say whatever without.
Let me pull it up so I'm the most accurate. I don't know off the top of my head.
Yeah, I mean, because if it's minimal, I don't want to get in the way of just moving forward personally. I don't remember what my other thing was. I swear there was something, but totally at a loss.
So I think we're done then, are we not?
Yeah, I think Robin was going to pull that up for us.
Oh.
Yeah, so if we went with the full social media advertising in the paper and digital advertising, so that would be stuff on Facebook for July and August, it's $2,800.
I say go ahead. I don't know what you, do you want to look at it, Doug, before we do that?
No, I don't know. That's not my bailiwick. So
I'm not going to have a strong opinion about it, and it's not that much money. So I think just go ahead.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And then I assume that's going into the CARES money FEMA money.
Yep.
So it probably soon, again, I guess, well, never mind. We still need to have an update from Mo and figure out when we're going to be finalizing up the FEMA request and the rest and move into the CARES thing. I don't know when that's going to happen. I guess we're still having time and stuff going into the FEMA thing too. So, but anyhow, I'm good.
All right.
So I guess Go ahead, Beth.
Good. I don't have anything else.
So, everybody have a good weekend then. Stay healthy.
You too, guys. Thank you.
Yeah, stay healthy.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.